All right. Hi, everybody. It's RCFB Talk 66. We're back with a call-in show. We want to hear from you. We want to hear all your thoughts about the college football. We just finished week zero. We're going to head into week one, which starts in a couple of days on Thursday. So join me, join my regular co-hosts, J.D. Moore and Sirius. My name is Bonac Hayeri, and we're going to go ahead and set this up right now. JD, you with me?
Yes, sir. Bobak, it is good to be talking college football, and especially after football has finally been played. I mean, we've been doing this show for so long in the off season, and now we've actually got actual football to talk about. I'm so delighted about it, and so delighted to talk about the vast majority of the games. You know, unfortunately, all the games ended at roughly about 9 p.m. Eastern. No other football games happened after that. Definitely nothing on the West Coast. Definitely nothing out in the Pacific Ocean. But from coast to coast, man, what a fantastic slate of football games.
Sirius, you've been able to join us.
I have, guys. JD, I could have sworn there was one more game on Saturday. Like, really late at night. It was kind of like a Hawaii test, I think.
No, I'm pretty confident the last game of the night was Nevada and New Mexico State. Pretty confident that was the last game. There was no other football being played, which, you know, would have been such a shame if, you know, we got to go see some very, very far West Coast games being played. But unfortunately, nope, I think those games ended with Nevada.
So again, we're heading into week one, so we'd love to hear from you. I know we've already got somebody up to ask a question, so if any time you want to join us, please feel free. We love hearing from you. This is RCFB Talk 66. My name is Bobak Hayeri. I'm joined by JD and Sirius. We've got games coming up this week, too. But before we get to that, let's see here. Blakey123, what's up?
Yeah, I just wanted to know if you guys think that Nebraska's back.
Well, I think maybe not right now.
I'm joking.
Back to what would be the question?
I'm totally joking.
Saying it could be
reverse psychology now.
I'm a sad Nebraska fan living in Omaha, so I'm just messing around. Yeah, we're terrible.
You know, and it's funny too. I mean, I'm going to say this much, and I know. I mean, I was just thinking about this with Hawaii too when we were getting ready for the show. I'm like, you know, Vanderbilt became something completely otherworldly against the Rainbow Warriors. But you always have to say, well, is this, I mean, I'm not necessarily saying Vandy's going to challenge for the SEC title, but, you know, are they pretty good this year? We'll see after a couple of games. And I think we'll see the same. I mean, Northwestern occasionally will have just a wildly successful season. I'm not necessarily saying this is going to be 1995, 1996 for them, but we'll see with how they do and how Nebraska does. Although, dang, that was the onside kick heard around the world, wasn't it? I mean, that
just one last thing. Your tweets on Nebraska football has been just perfect the last week or so. So keep it going.
We really appreciate that. Thank you. And I'm not going to claim too many of those. We have a good group of folks who we collaborate on a lot of our humor, and we try to make it fun and nothing too mean. Because, I mean, I've said it before. I mean, there was a fun post on RCFB. I want to say it was on Sunday, saying, you know, let's say something good about Nebraska. And I've said this before, and I've been on the record saying this before we ever did RCFB Talks. I think Nebraska, when Nebraska's good, it's good for college football. I think they're fun. I think it's neat to see them be good. The Huskers, big red wave that travels around. I mean, I've seen it in person. It's fabulous. The fans are great. The only fans that seem to really not get along with them are Colorado, but every team's got their rival group. I mean, that's just what it is. If you want to see people really get mad at Nebraska, talk to Colorado fans. But beyond that, I think they're a fun fan base. I think it's a great program when they're doing well. I've been to Lincoln. I've been to a game, and it is a fun environment. So I just hope that they turn it around. If with Scott Frost, okay, fine, maybe they'll find someone else. But they've kind of, you know, these things are cyclical, so we're all kind of watching them sort of flail around, unfortunately, in a very public manner with apparently an audience of how many million was it again? JD, seriously, remember what that was?
4.15 for some reason comes to mind.
Yeah, I think that was about right. I think it was 4.1 something. So, you know, it happens. I'm sure it was a good trip for a lot of the folks who went out there. I saw the tweets of the Nebraska fans rallying before the game in Dublin, and it seemed like a party. So, Ryan, what are you predicting for the season?
Honestly, I'm just curious on when it comes to the Houston UTSA game this upcoming year, because for each of those teams, you have a lot kind of weighing on how the rest of the year could be kind of portrayed from an opening weekend through, you know, what could happen into like a postseason itself, where UTSA could end up, you know, maybe being a New Year's Six, like, dark horse in a sense. And then Houston, you know, when it comes to UTSA game, a lot of people are kind of buying it. And the next week is like, you know, will Houston finally kind of perform with the local alumni? Because it's been kind of split still on Holgorsen, which is kind of crazy on what's been, how he's kind of done. But what's y'all's thought on that game itself? And when it comes to each of those teams and what could happen over the season from this one kind of opening weekend?
So this is one of those really sneaky good games in week one, because these are two G5 teams that are exceptionally good in the state of Texas. UTSA is coming off of its best season ever with an 11-win season. They got the CUSA title. Jeff Traylor, who we've had on the show before, absolutely knows what he's doing down in San Antonio. He's got a returning quarterback in Frank Harris. He's got really strong defensive guys coming back like Rashad Wisdom at linebacker. And what he's got going there is the start of a really strong program. Now flip that onto the other side, where we saw Houston. They ended up finishing the year ranked fairly high. They made it to the AAC championship game. Dana Holgorsen, I think, is probably going to be taking that opportunity with Cincinnati losing so many guys to the NFL draft, trying to do a rebuild for this upcoming year. Hopefully it's a reload for the Cincinnati Bearcats. But for Houston, you know, he's got the opportunity there to make a really strong run. And this is going to be a really clear dictation of where these two teams are going to be going, at least in terms of projection. I think you are right on the money when you're talking about this is going to be a very strong start to how this season is going to play out for them, and whether they're going to have New Year's Six hopes, or even if you're Houston, an exceptionally outside shot at the playoffs if you have an undefeated run, which certainly with this schedule and with the talent that Houston has is completely possible. On the other side, though, with UTSA, this is the first time that they've had to build upon really high success. I've always said before, it's one thing to completely build something out of nothing. It's something to take some guy's other players and get them to buy in and then to make some magic happen. But where a coach is always the best is when they taste success and they can continue on that success. And I think that's something that we really haven't seen. We know for a fact that we've never seen that in UTSA's program history, because this has been the most successful season that they've ever had. Houston, under Dana Holgorsen, saw like some inconsistencies when Dana Holgorsen was at West Virginia. He's now finally kind of built what he's wanted to build down in Houston. So this game, I think the early line is something like, I think Houston was favored by 4 or something like that. But this is going to be one of those games that's going to be sneaky good. You're going to see a lot of really high-flying offense. It's going to be a really, really exciting game to watch. I would definitely put that on one of your main screens if you're putting that on your TVs this weekend, because it's going to be an excellent game. That's going to speak a lot to the volumes of both these teams.
So, Ryan, what are you thinking about the game?
I mean, I myself am a Houston guy and have been stressing out a little bit all week because, you know, as he's saying, these are two very veteran teams. Both have senior quarterbacks. You know, Houston's got a very senior type front seven. Outside of the left tackle for UTSA, they've got a very senior offensive line. They both have losses that have happened when it comes to their starting running backs, with Houston having an injury that before the season and UTSA having a, you know, kind of losing their main guy for graduation. And then wide receiving core, I mean, it's just interesting and kind of similar on each ends. When it comes to each of the teams, the only differences would be with UTSA, they have some question marks when it comes to their front seven on how they can perform. And for Houston, it's going to be their cornerbacks, because Houston had both their corners graduate last year, and UTSA has a number of excellent wide receivers that if UTSA's offensive line can hold up against the front seven of Houston, I mean, it could be interesting when it comes to the passing game and Frank Harris. So, I mean, yeah, it's going to be I think it's going to be a very interesting game, and from a personal standpoint, quite stressful. So, yeah, I'll be in San Antonio watching my Cougs, but it's going to be for an outside party, it's going to be quite entertaining.
And we're definitely, I mean, Houston is, I think in a lot of sense, it's been the team that seems most likely to make it through to be the G5, while they're still a G5 team, and punch through and get to the New Year's Six this season, at least early on with predictions that are going on. But that is going to be a great test, a great opener to see where they are. And then I think Texas Tech immediately afterwards, obviously we've had their head coach on a Twitter space as well. It's going to be interesting to see how that goes. Obviously, it's first year, so they might be a little shaky. And then Kansas is Kansas. You never know quite where they're at. We're somewhat optimistic about where they're going with Lance Leopold, but it's still, you never know exactly where they are on their rebuilding. And then we'll see where they go when they get to conference play. But I can't blame you. It's an exciting game. I think that's going to be one that I'm looking forward to. JD?
Yeah, and I was about to say, you know, if you get a win over UTSA, you start to build a little bit of momentum. Texas Tech, you mentioned before, this is Joey McGuire's first year, not just at Texas Tech, but as a head coach in general. And then you have the opportunity to build a lot of momentum into your first real test, because you've got the stretch of Kansas, Rice, Tulane, and then you're on the road at Memphis. But outside of that, your schedule is fairly favorable if you're a Houston Cougars fan, because you end up missing Cincinnati unless you're going to meet with them in the championship game. You avoid UCF this year, which is another huge benefit for Houston. Like I said, this is an opportunity for Houston if they can start some momentum and get a really solid win against UTSA and build on this momentum. There's a strong case to be made that this is a team that has the talent, firepower, and the ability to go all the way to actually become that outside opportunity, especially if they run the table. Now, granted, this is going to be a year that's going to have a lot of different opportunities for teams that are not Ohio State, Alabama, and Georgia, because we have such a wide open year this year of there's not a clear far and away number four team in the country right now. But if you're Houston and you can get this win against UTSA, it's really difficult to look at the rest of this schedule and go, there's no way that they couldn't make it happen.
The only thing I'll add to it is, and this is outside of Houston, but the comment about Houston being the primary G5 or something like that, so I have a buddy of mine that works at UCF, and all I'll say is keep an eye on them. They could be very interesting this year. Their transfers that they brought in are quite good. And I've been hearing a lot of good things. And so, keep a good eye on UCF and what happens out of Orlando. And that's all I'll say.
Absolutely. And I just wanted to circle back to Blakey. I asked you just sort of, what do you think your Huskers heading into this season?
Oh, I might kind of predicted maybe like 5 or 6 wins. I'm a realist when it comes to Nebraska football. So I never expected big things, I guess. In the beginning, I just thought maybe 5 or 6 was possible, but obviously losing the first one kind of makes it hard to get to that point, unfortunately. So it's going to be a rough year. I think there's some promise from the first game. There's some things that looked good. Casey Thompson had a great first half. Second half, you know, he was just kind of off, right? He was kind of inaccurate. It wasn't hitting his receivers. But I think there's still some plenty of winnable games. I just have zero faith in Scott Frost, as most of Husker Nation does. And so, yeah, at this point, all we can do is hope for the best. We're all kind of, you know, feeling a bit depressed, you know, in week zero. So it's always kind of hard going into week one, 0-1. So we'll see what happens. Yeah.
I hear you on that. But yeah. I am curious, though. I think everybody's kind of counting down the days until October 1st when Scott Frost, his buyout drops down to, I think it's $7.5 million from the original absurd number that he's got right now. I'm curious for you, as a Nebraska Cornhuskers fan, you've seen the Scott Frost years now for 5 years. What would a season need to execute for this year for you to say, you know what, I would like to give Scott Frost another year? Like, what to you, as a realist, makes you go, you know what, I would want Scott Frost back if Nebraska does XYZ? What's XYZ for you?
I think number one is make a bowl game. That has to happen. And two, you have to beat Iowa. I think if you do those two things, then I think bring him back. I wanted him gone before this year, but if he makes a bowl game and they beat Iowa, that's, I guess, some momentum and some success, as sad as that sounds, that would be moving things in the right direction. So that, for me, that's what it would be, I think, for most fans, especially, is just get to the, hit those two sort of points and things were looking up. And again, we don't want to rebuild again, because we've done that, as you guys all know, several times in the last 15 years, right? And so starting over doesn't sound like a lot of fun. Granted, can it get much worse? Maybe not. It can only get better, I would think, with a rebuild. And so that's the scary thing. It's like, well, if we did rebuild, we're probably still going to win at least three games. So it's like, does it really matter at this point? But again, like, we all still want to see Scott succeed and the program to succeed. And if we can do it with him at the helm, great. But again, so yeah, six games, beat Iowa. And I think we'll at least be happy enough to sort of say, bring it back for another year.
Hey, I appreciate that insight. And especially, you know, you want to see the favorite son always succeed when you put him in ultimate power. I feel like Texas Tech had the same thing with Cliff Kingsbury. We've seen that with other programs before of, you know, you bring back the beloved player and you want things to work out because you just can't bear the idea of, you know, this was our favorite player back in the day and now we're asking him to leave the program. Nobody truly wants that. So I understand that hesitation and definitely that frustration. With everything that was promised from Scott Frost from the very beginning, doing that undefeated season over at UCF and being able to come back home and say, you know what, mama called, I need to go and do this job to turn things around. And, you know, to see, I think the record is now, what, 5-21 in one score games and something like 3-21 in games that he's trailed at the half.
Yeah.
I can't imagine that type of frustration that you see, especially when it's a favorite son. Because it's one thing to say, like, you know, oh, Mike Riley didn't succeed here, but he's the outsider, and that doesn't matter. I 100% relate to that idea of, man, it sucks that it's going down like this.
Yeah, I think the hardest part is that, like, when we hired him, he was one of the, if not the hottest coach in the market at the time. And so, like, to get him was like, okay, this is it. Everybody wants Scott Frost, and we got him because, you know, he's an alumni, right? And so, but yeah, it's just not working. So there's a lot of hope in the beginning because of the reasons we just stated, but then it's all gone about as poorly as you could possibly imagine. And so anyway, it's probably enough Nebraska talk for the group here, but I'll leave it at that. So.
Well, we appreciate the time. Thank you so much for joining us. And I mean, it's a pressing topic. I mean, gosh knows, they were one of the main stories of week one. And
yeah,
good for, you know, it is, again, when Nebraska rises, they're going to, as I said, they're going to be as big as they ever were. And it's going to be fun to have them up there again. It's fun. You know, the old blue blood teams, everyone loves looking when they're not doing great. And everyone loves when they're successful. I mean, not everyone loves. They're fun to hate when they're.
when yeah. They're luckily great, for man. Me, luckily for me, I lived in Tuscaloosa for a while and I worked for the University of Alabama and worked right next to the stadium. And so I have that connection as well. So I always have them to look forward to on Saturdays in addition to Nebraska. So when my team loses, I just go and watch the better team every time. And so like it bounces out. So.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Well, thanks again.
Yep.
So thanks. Let's see here. You've been really patient, Andrew, Andrew C. Wyatt. We'd love to hear from you. It looks like it accidentally dumped you out and put you as a listener again. Don't worry about that. Well, again, if you want to come back up, just no problem. So again, this is RCFB Talk 66. So let's see here. We're also, I see you, Jared. I'm going to let you up too. Maybe we can hear from you. And again, if you want to join us, please hit request. We always love hearing from people. And as we go ahead and set that up, I'm actually a little disappointed. I'm not going to be there for Mike Golic Jr. I am going to be covering a game on Thursday night. We've started our own sort of media thing, that's something we do at RCFB. We do cover games. I'm going to be at Minnesota hosting New Mexico State. I absolutely had to cover that game after Jerry Kill, the former Minnesota head coach, started to kind of get a little testy about the Gophers and whether or not he's particularly impressed by PJ Fleck. So when I started to hear that kind of fire coming from New Mexico State, suddenly that game got interesting. And even though New Mexico State's going into this game 0-1, looking forward to the game and the post game interviews with the coaches if both of them do it. So that should be an entertaining game. And then actually, gosh, I've got two games this week. I'm going to cover a D3 game, which I sometimes do because, I live in the Twin Cities. There's a college just northwest of here that's one of those D3 powers, and they had a really famous coach there for many years who passed away. But St. John's of Minnesota, really cool little campus. They always have, I think, the biggest crowds in D3. They're hosting that perennial power, Wisconsin-Whitewater, which is actually where Kansas's head coach was originally. He won, like, I forgot how many national championships. There was like 12 years there where every national championship at D3 except one had the same two teams in it. And that extra game still had one of those two teams, which won that game. So anyway, that should be a fun game to also do. We like to mix it up on RCFB. So anyway, Jared, what's up? I saw you unmuted briefly, so I know you're up here. What's up?
What up, my dude?
What up, what up? Hey.
Big Utah fan right here.
Big Utah fan, big Utah game coming up. How are you feeling with the Utes going down to the swamp and taking on the Gators this weekend?
I'm feeling pretty good. I'm going to be heading down there too.
Very nice. First time down in Gainesville?
It will be my first time, yeah. I'm excited.
Fantastic. I'm
hearing all sorts of things about the humidity from all the Florida fans.
I'm sure it's going to be an adjustment for sure. Now, you're looking forward to this game. What's your feeling about Cam Rising? Is he going to rise to the occasion against an SEC defense?
Oh, for sure. I think he proved it in the Ohio State game, the Rose Bowl last year, although they lost, but he played well, performed under pressure really well.
That was an instant classic, which is one of those overused terms, but that Rose Bowl was absolutely, I mean, it, again, somebody had to lose it, but it was, I mean, for all of us who watched it, it was an absolute classic for that game. So tell me about it. How do you think the Utes are going to do in the Pac-12?
I think they'll do really well this year. Of course, I'm mostly looking forward to the Oregon and USC game. It seems like those are the only games to look forward to at this point, just because the Pac-12 is not doing so well right now.
And what are your thoughts on that? You know, because obviously that's the specter that's kind of rising above the entire season is what happened, you know, just last month. Where do you want to see your Utes, and do you want to see the Pac-12 stay together with the remaining teams and maybe add a few, or do you think the Utes should have a future elsewhere, like the Big 12 or somewhere else?
You know, I'd be fine if they added a few teams to the Pac-12. I wouldn't be opposed to that. I think, of course, Big 10 would be the coolest thing, but that sounds like it's pretty unlikely. But I'd even be cool with the Big 12.
If you end up going to the Big 12, obviously, I know that's always been a rumor with going with the other corner states, with Arizona, Arizona State, Colorado, going back into the Big 12. What would your take be on going back and having BYU as a conference mate if you were to take that option into the Big 12?
I'd love that. I mean, that rivalry runs deep, as everyone knows. And I love when we used to play them every year. I've missed, you know, not playing them every year. But plus, they need to get revenge after the loss last year.
That would be a good match, though. It would be nice to see them back together on a regular basis without having to worry about scheduling around, you know, existing schedules and all of that. I'm also kind of looking forward to seeing, you know, obviously they've been in the news for less than savory reasons of what happened in the past, but that San Diego State game with Utah is going to be interesting. Uh-huh. San Diego State, for all the stress they've been under right now with both off the field with some of the current players, but also some of the past stars, they are still always one of those teams out there that in G5, everyone wonders, is this going to be the year they punch through and become the potential they have being the big school in the city of San Diego, which is a pretty big metro market in SoCal. Certainly, there was a compelling argument made by, I think it was Wilner or Canzano, I can't remember, but Wilner about, you know, if the Pac-12 starts to reload, they might consider a San Diego State to kind of get back right into the depth of the Southern California market, which is, I think, of course, very important, not just from a TV market, but from a recruiting standpoint. But I think it's going to be interesting to see that game with Utah, now that I think about it. That's one of those that I'm looking forward to. It. I mean, obviously, no one expects the Utes to have any trouble with Southern Utah in between It's a game in Gainesville in the swamp. That's San Diego State game. Are you going to be? Are you in San? Are you in Salt Lake City?
Yeah, I'm near Salt Lake City, so I'm pretty close. I go to a few games a year.
Excellent. So you're going to be there for that San Diego State game too, or do you kind of pick and choose a little bit where you do your home games?
I just kind of pick and choose. So we'll see. But that would be a good one to go to. I sometimes forget about that brutal loss last year, so it'll be a good game this year.
Absolutely. Well, hey, thanks for joining us, Jared. We really appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, good luck. And hey, man, enjoy the trip. I mean, regardless of wins or losses, going to a place like, you know, an environment like the Swamp, it's got to be fun. That's what people, you know, I always say there's stadiums where, as a fan, I just love to go to them. And I've gone to a couple, and that one definitely would be on my list of places I'd love to see. Maybe not this time of year, to be honest. If I had my, this is going to a neutral game, am I going like November or December? But
yeah.
But certainly I would love to see it at some point.
It'll be a great experience regardless of the outcome, that's for sure.
Definitely. Stay hydrated when you go, for sure.
Okay, will do. Thanks, appreciate it.
All right, take care. Hey, Andrew, it looks like you're unmuted. Now that we got you, we'd love to hear from you.
So, what about the Notre Dame Alabama game?
Are you talking about Notre Dame Ohio State that's coming up?
Yes, Notre Dame Ohio State.
Well, that's definitely the big one for sure. You know, I think it's hard not to. I mean, both teams are obviously have a lot of storylines going into this. My personal take is I'm leaning towards Ohio State, just to jump to my chase on that. I know JD and Sirius will have thoughts on this. But I think the fact that, you know, you got a new head coach at Notre Dame, he's got to prove himself, and he's starting right in the deep end against an Ohio State team that was, frankly, disappointed to be in the Rose Bowl last year, which was kind of a statement in and of itself. But we'll set that aside. But here he is. Yeah, now he's going to be jumping in the deep end. It's going to be interesting to see where that goes. JD, Sirius, what are your thoughts on this?
I mean, you want to talk about how a team can define their legacy first and foremost? Man, Marcus Freeman at Notre Dame can make a massive statement with an upset win over Ohio State in the Horseshoe and really show that he's the right guy at Notre Dame. Now, granted, he's a young guy. He is full of energy. He is, I think, what Notre Dame has needed to replace Brian Kelly and really bring a lot of juice into the program up at Notre Dame. But if we're talking about the opportunity for Notre Dame to really jump in and start their own narrative early, this is going to be the best type of opportunity that they're going to get. Ohio State, I think everybody is kind of presuming they're already going to be in that playoff mix, the very heavy favorite for the Big Ten title. But for Notre Dame, this is a massive opportunity for them with already ranked, I believe it's number 5 in the country right now. This is their chance to really show, hey, Marcus Freeman knows what he's doing. He is going to make us competitive. He's going to make it look like we belong on the national stage that we want to belong at. This is going to be a really, really good game. At least I'm hoping it will be, because there's always the opportunity of, you know, you return to CJ Stroud, you return this incredible core of wide receivers. You were just talking about the Rose Bowl from last year, Bobak. You returned so much production in that receiving core with Ohio State. They should not have any kind of problem moving the ball vertically. But you got a brand new defensive coordinator. He was brought in from Oklahoma State, Jim Knowles, to fix up what Kerry Coombs had left behind. We're going to see if Ohio State is ready to be that killing machine that's going to challenge an Alabama this year, that's going to challenge a Georgia this year. It should be a good clash of the Titans, and I'm really, really wanting this to be a competitive game that goes all the way down to the last drive.
Yeah, I think both coaches are coming into this with something to prove. Obviously, Marcus Freeman is coming in wanting to set the standard for Notre Dame and what the fans should expect and what the team is capable of with this. You know, if he can come out of the gate and secure a win against Ohio State with as much talent as they have on that roster, then that's going to be a huge, huge statement win for that program and just really set him off great for the 2022 season. Ryan Day, on the other hand, he's proving he can win at a high level. But last year was also the first year that he had lost two games so far in his admittedly short career. So, you know, there's got to be some fire in that program. They've had to listen to some jawing from that team up north. So, you know, they're wanting to prove that they're right back in the mix. They haven't lost a step. And that they're going to be back in the playoff hunt again this year. Especially coming off of a pretty tight game against Utah in that Rose Bowl. And also that loss to Oregon in the second game of the year last year as one of their non-conference games to a ranked opponent. So I think that they're going to – Ryan Day is going to try to limit the mistakes that kept them from getting all the way to the playoff last year and come out and try to make a statement if he can. Obviously, Marcus Freeman knows what this defense is capable of at Notre Dame, so it would be interesting to see how the two head coaches match up and how this turns out for both teams involved.
Yeah, so – I think this is definitely going to be an interesting game. We're all looking forward to it. It's going to answer some questions for both programs. And Andrew, thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate
it.
That's one of those topics we had. Definitely a game that had to be discussed. Thank you. Hey, Tim, what's up?
Hey, guys, how are you?
Good.
Good. Hey, I wanted to run something by you. This week zero thing has become kind of a – it's starting to kind of grow here in the last couple of years where, you know, it's gathering some interest. What about this? What if the MAC, Conference USA, the Sun Belt, I don't know if you want to throw the Mountain in there, those group of five conferences, maybe leaving the American out of there, tried to do something where in an attempt to get exposure, some kind of, you know, conference challenge, like you do in college basketball, these crossover games where Toledo, instead of playing and opening up with Long Island, which I didn't even know had a football team, would go and play, you know, Western Kentucky or something like that, in an attempt to, in that week before the big boys really start throwing punches at each other, to get some exposure for the group of five programs.
So first and foremost, I love the idea of a conference matchup, of trying to make sure that you can put two conferences, whether, like you said in your example, the MAC and Sun Belt, or CUSA and AAC, or whatever combination you want to throw out there. I would love to see that kind of matchup on a regular basis, because I love to see that kind of really good scheduling. On the flip side, I think one of the massive issues that comes, unfortunately, with the inequality of football is these types of programs have to take certain types of games in order to be able to go play fairly decent football. So one of the things that I immediately think of is, you know, you brought up the Toledo schedule and how they're opening up the year against Long Island. One of the things that Toledo has to do this year is they have to be a body bag game to Ohio State, because that game's going to pay them a lot of money to actually run the rest of their athletics department for the rest of this year. They have to take that type of game in order to pay it. And unfortunately, you know, no matter what kind of deal you might get with an ESPN or a linear network on a week zero, that paycheck is never going to be as large as one of those body bag games. There's other MAC teams that are also going through just an absolutely brutal schedule for this upcoming year that I think, again, it's to make sure that they can pay for everything that they need to pay for. It's to make sure that they can actually stay financially solvent. And unfortunately, it's going to be a huge deal where they're not going to be able to make that type of money on a makeup game. Like the first example that I immediately go to is Kent State. So Kent State this year, they are having to play a absurd out-of-conference schedule, which is they're going to start the year against Washington on the road, which, of course, Washington, not as great last year, but still Power 5 program. They're going to get a huge paycheck out of that. The week after that, they're on the road at Oklahoma, which, again, that's a body bag game that they're going to get a very nice paycheck for. And then you know what happens after that? They're on the road at Georgia. So for their non-conference, they picked three Power 5 teams that is going to exclusively pay for all of the rest of their stuff. And unfortunately, I think those numbers, don't quote me exactly on them, I believe it's somewhere in that range of $1.7 million for those three games combined for Kent State, which is going to pay for all of the stuff that they need to do. Because Kent State isn't going to generate revenue in basketball, in baseball, in hockey, in whatever other sports to make them solvent. But they take those body bag games to make sure that they actually can afford all of those things for their student athletes. Now, unfortunately, no matter what happens, you know, I would love to see a matchup of, say, Kent State Tulane in a week zero game, because I think it would just be fun as hell. Unfortunately, no one's going to pay $1.7 million for that game. And unfortunately, that's the only reason why I don't think that ends up happening. I would love to still see it, though.
But again, it's not necessarily in place of, and I go back to the Toledo schedule, Toledo being or replacing Ohio State, it would be Toledo replacing Long Island. Trying to gain some exposure, just that, you know, these conferences, these small conferences have such little window of opportunity to gain any kind of exposure. I mean, they get late in the season, they start playing games on Tuesdays and Wednesdays, which as a college football fan, I love. Heck, play all week long. I don't care. I'll watch all the games. But I just wonder if there's would be an audience out there on week zero where these conferences said, hey, we're going to get together, you know, present something to whether it be ESPN or Fox Sports or whatever it is. Again, you're not going to get rich off of it, but try to gain as much exposure as possible. Again, you could play this year. It could be, you know, again, I'll use Toledo versus Western Kentucky. Toledo plays at Western Kentucky. Next year, you know, Tulane comes to Toledo. You know, just to kind of to gain as much exposure as possible. The only thing I really hate about college football is we have those weeks where you have one or two nice games and then a bunch of dogs. And I'll give you the week zero, to be honest with you, Northwestern and Nebraska was awesome. I enjoyed watching the game. Fun to watch. Turned out to be a good football game. North Carolina and Florida A&M. I mean, come on. I wouldn't walk across the street for free to go watch the game, let alone put it on my TV. And I know these programs, these smaller programs need this money and this big payout, but I think with the way the landscape in college football is changing, the small boys are going to have to try to figure out a way to, find another way to finance a lot of this stuff. And again, I live in Toledo. I went to the University of Toledo. It's cool that they're playing Ohio State. I look at that and go, and I'm glad they're getting that nice big paycheck, but it's not a very interesting football game. And it's not an interesting football game other than Toledo fans. I'm sure Ohio State fans, and I'm also a Buckeye fan, that doesn't interest me whatsoever. I'm tired of watching the Michigan schedule, for example. Hawaii, Colorado State, Connecticut. I mean, it's like the college football is doing that, the NFL preseason stuff. You know, okay, let's play these three, you know, dog games, and then we'll get into the Big Ten. I would rather see, if we're moving towards that NFL model, I would rather see, you know, the NCAA or somebody saying, okay, hey, here are the 65 teams that are considered the big boys, and they can only play the 65 teams that are in that grouping. And I know it hurts teams like Toledo and Kent State and all of those types of programs, but maybe it is time that, you know, those programs start to drop down to a different level or whatever. Cause it's the one thing that college football misses that the NFL has. The NFL has, you know, every week you're going to have great games. College football doesn't always have that. And, you know, other than maybe one or two here and there during certain types of the season.
Well, you brought a lot of great points up there, but one of the overarching ones that I kind of want to throw back out there was the point about exposure that you made. And, you know, you don't get that same exposure and you don't necessarily get the same solvency if you play like a Long Island University, for example. But one of the things that I'll also have to point out very candidly is, you know, another huge revenue maker for these MAC teams and for these lower G5 teams is a bowl game. And when you have to take all these body bag games to go play in Ohio State, a Georgia, and all these other teams, you still got to find some way to get to at least 6 wins to get bowl qualified. And historically, when they to have too many bowl eligible teams, which has happened in the past, generally it's the MAC that is the first team that gets cut off of the cutting block. So it might not even matter if you have a 7-5 record. You might not make a bowl game if there's not a room for you at the table. Now, of course, the reason that you want to try to schedule those FCS games, if you are a Toledo, if you are a Kent State, is as you're taking these body bags, you also want to take care of your own ecosystem and make sure that you can also make your own money as well. And I know that Cirrus has plenty of thoughts when it comes to cupcake games and the values of them. And I'll let him go ahead and speak on that, and I'll zip my lip for a little minute.
Yeah, so I know that when it comes to cupcake games, you know, most fans aren't exactly excited about watching them because, to be honest, there are cupcake games for a reason. There's a few upsets here and there, but for the most part, it's not a competitive game, and you wind up seeing a lot of, like, second, third, fourth stringers that wind up on the field for the dominant team, the P5 team, or in some cases, the G5 team, and they just kind of rub the body bag opponent until they get their money's worth and send them home. But in terms of scheduling, I will say that for as much as everyone wants to complain about the fact that, you know, SEC teams have a week off before their rivalry games, or, you know, they're playing their cupcake game against an FCS opponent in November when everybody else is playing real competition, the counterpart to that is that usually these teams are playing at least FBS G5 opponents, if not conference games or another out-of-conference P5 in the first 2 weeks of the season. And that's kind of the trade-off, because personally I've seen my team have to play a conference game week one with no prep time, no tune-up whatsoever, and it's rough. You can tell that the guys need a few more reps of in-game game speed practice in order to really get going. And if they played in week 3, probably could have won the game. So that's kind of the counterpart there when it comes to talking about cupcakes. If we're going to play them, it kind of needs to be something that everybody splits up and plays at different times of year, because otherwise, yeah, you wind up with a boring slate of games that really aren't going to draw eyeballs, aren't going to get advertisers excited. It's just not going to be a great experience for the fans to see, unless you're a fan of one of the teams that doesn't get as much exposure, like a Long Island University. And then you might actually get to see them even if it's on, you know, ESPN Plus or something. So, Bob, speaking of Long Island University, I'll throw that to you.
Well, they're LIU most of the time. It's so funny to me to hear it Long Island, because they get summarized in a lot of schedules. But they've been around for a while. It's so funny. They're two campuses. So LIU Post played D2 football, and then they moved up because – LIU Brooklyn played D1 basketball, so they decided to merge the athletic departments. They had different names, so they came up with a new name, the Sharks. And so Post now plays FCS. They just moved up, and Brooklyn plays basketball, which, you know, is a little more of a New York sport. Obviously, got St. John's. They got a couple of great basketball schools up in there. But yeah, they're interesting. But I just wanted to kind of build off of the ecosystem thing, because it is sort of, you know, Toledo's getting paid to go take on a tough game at Ohio State. We talked about Kent State. By the way, it's funny, LIU plays both of those teams. So Kent State's getting paid by Oklahoma and Georgia, and obviously Toledo's getting a payday from Ohio State, and then they're giving a payday to Long Island, which needs that same money to kind of help their program going, because otherwise they're not making any money. And even with that, they're no doubt taking some of the university money to kind of make them whole. So it is kind of an ecosystem there, and it's just always been that way. And I agree, sometimes it makes for some pretty miserable games or some spectacular upsets where a team just got paid to to get that surprise win. But, Tim, thanks for joining us. It's always an ongoing question. We really appreciate it.
Hey, it was fun to listen.
Thanks, man. Hey, PK, what's up? You've been really patient.
What's up, man? Hey, thanks for having me on. I'm headed to New Orleans this weekend to cheer on LSU against Florida State. And I'm pretty excited. Just have a couple questions about the game. So 2.5-point favorites we are. And I feel like that's a little underwhelming. Like, I have pretty realistic expectations about what LSU is capable of this year. I just feel like it's sort of like a historically average-ish LSU roster with finally a competent head coach. So that's something I feel good about. So my question is, like, what should I expect from Florida State? Like, I feel like the spread is pretty narrow for when you consider their last season. I mean, that loss at home to Hill State, and now they're bringing back Norvell for the third year, and I don't feel like he's really proven enough for that point spread to be 2.5 against Kelly, but I feel like anything can happen also week one, so I just, like, have no idea what to expect for the game.
I mean, I think that's a fair question for everybody trying to look into this game. And I think that's why the spread is currently only about 2.5 points. So, I mean, I know that you mentioned that, you know, this is kind of looking like an average LSU year. Granted, this is the first year with Brian Kelly, but you still have an LSU roster. You still have a huge talent differential against most teams. And I think with Florida State, obviously, it's been well documented about the inability to get consistent offensive linemen on the field in order to get guys at the quarterback position. And granted, we saw their first game in week zero against Duke Ness, and they were able to blow them out really strongly. They ended up having 3 100-yard rushers in that game. So I think a lot of people are immediately excited about that. And, you know, it's a step in the right direction for Florida State of actually beating your FCS opponents. So I think everybody at least sees that with Florida State as an improvement. But, you know, last year, everybody saw in week one, you know, this is also funny that it's the second year in a row that it's the first game of the year is going to be Mike Norvell versus Brian Kelly, because we saw this game last year when Florida State took Notre Dame to overtime down in Doak Campbell. And
right. Everybody and thought he said that thing after the game. I forgot what it was.
And everybody thought, like, you know, hey, Florida State is back in it. They were super competitive against Notre Dame. And then suddenly the wheels kind of fell off when they played Jacksonville State, and everything just kind of went to hell in a handbasket for Florida State. So I think that's why a lot of people aren't 100% sure what to expect in this game. Now, for me personally, I do think that 2.5 point spread is a little bit low. I would anticipate that LSU, especially playing in New Orleans, I mean, come on, this is going to be an LSU home game. Everybody knows that this is not a quote-unquote neutral site game. This is going to be an LSU game in a slightly larger stadium that's also encapsulated. I mean, they're going to have the band out there. If they're going up high, the student section is going to be screaming for them to play NAC. This is going to be one of those situations that it's going to feel like you're playing a game in Death Valley. And so for that reason alone, I would give LSU home field advantage just based off of that. And based off of everything that we've seen out of LSU's ability to have a talent differential and the ability of Brian Kelly and his coaching abilities versus what we've seen with Mike Norvell's coaching abilities at Florida State, I would give a lot of institutional advantages to LSU in this game. And I'll be pleasantly surprised if Mike Norvell comes out and gives LSU a solid punch in the mouth or pulls off the upset. But I'm not particularly looking at this game and going, you know what, I like Florida State's chances in this game. I think they're going to try to do some really good, strong ground establishment, because we know they have the running backs in that room to actually pull that off. I think the quarterback is still questionable when it comes to Florida State. That defense, we haven't quite seen them against top-tier talent, and we don't quite know what that looks like for them. So give me LSU in this opportunity, and I think with the 2.5-point spread, I don't think it'll be as close. I'd have to give LSU the advantage.
I will say this, to play devil's advocate on the home field thing, just having gone to going to LSU games and stuff for a while and going to the UCLA game last year, the first game of the season, like, if they don't come out rolling, that home field advantage can turn sour pretty quickly. So I think it's, like, extremely crucial for Florida State to come out competitive for them to even have a chance. But I guess that applies, like, any college football game. Who do you think has more to lose? And I'll drop and listen.
I think it'd be interesting to see how Florida State does establishing the run game, because it was clear from watching that Duquesne game that that was a priority for them. You know, the former offensive line coach is now offensive coordinator, and he's done a lot of work trying to overhaul that line that brought in a lot of talent, either through the transfer portal or through normal recruiting, to try to shore it up, because that had been a major, major deficit for them prior to Norvell's arrival. So it's been a real work in progress the past few years. So I'd be curious to see how those guys are able to stand up to an LSU defense, which we know is going to have guys that are big and fast. And, you know, they had three different rushers go for over 100 yards against Duquesne. Don't think they're going to be able to do that against an LSU defense, but I think that would be an interesting matchup, especially since, you know, Brian Kelly brought over a fair amount of staff from Notre Dame. He did not bring his defensive coordinator. So we'll see how that works out for the Tigers. And, yeah, whether they can, you know, kind of shut Florida State down at the beginning and kind of, you know, stop the momentum they've got, because they have to be feeling pretty good now coming off of a big win in week zero.
But to answer that original question, though, of who has more to lose, I think immediately it's going to be Florida State has more to lose if Mike Norvell, you know, let's say they go in there and they get walloped. Like, we're talking like a 38-10 type of showing. That's going to be a huge loss for Florida State, because not only is it a, hey, we don't know if Mike Norvell can continue to compete, but it's going to be a question of, well, what do we do now? Because Willie Taggart didn't work. Mike Norvell might not work, depending on what we see on the outcome of this game, especially if they're blown out. And then if you're Florida State, you got to just kind of go, well, where do we go from here? We don't want to necessarily rebuild again, but again, everything that you've seen with Mike Norvell, losing the number one overall recruit in the country to an FCS school, not being able to close on the recruiting trail in the past couple of years, he's really struggled to put together a strong record. And if he comes into this game and completely falls out flat, I think FSU has a lot more to lose in this game than Brian Kelly and LSU. Because no matter what, regardless on whether you think that Brian Kelly and his family, or however else he's now pronouncing it these days, you know, it's not necessarily going to be out of the honeymoon period. I think he gets a grace win as long as he stays competitive. Now, if he goes out and loses something like 38-10, I don't know what anybody in Baton Rouge starts to think after that. But in terms of like who has the most to lose, I think LSU has a lot of cushion and grace if they lose this game, especially if it's close. FSU, man, if it's a walloping, that is a bad day in Tallahassee.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing how this game goes. I love the Superdome. I covered the national championship there, which is also basically an LSU home game, although Clemson fans really, they got their allotment and they filled it up because, you know, it's Clemson, they show. So that was, I'm looking forward to seeing this. Florida State versus LSU in the offseason, we circled it a lot. Florida State, you know, obviously being Duquesne was great, but this is going to be a good test to see where they are. And same for LSU. So this is the perfect kind of game in that regard. But thanks again for joining us. You know, we've got a couple of folks who've been patient. We're moving our way through. Wolf, what's up? We'd love to hear from you.
Hey, what's up, guys? I wanted to talk about a game I wasn't sure if y'all had covered yet, but it's the Backyard Brawl. I think people are overlooking it, but it's the first time in, I think, 11 years the West Virginia's played Pitt, so it's a pretty big deal for these two schools. It's a rivalry where the students hate each other, the alumni hate each other, all the kids went to school, well, most of them went to school near each other, and they hate each other. Pitt's got a lot to lose coming off a season where they were ACC champions. They're ranked very highly. They've got a new transfer QB coming in. I think Vegas set the line at 7.5 for Pitt. And I just think it's a potential upset waiting to happen. There are a lot of unknowns for this game. I wanted y'all's input.
First off, this is an exciting year for Mountaineer fans, because not only do you get the Backyard Brawl coming back after a long hiatus, you also get the Black Diamond Trophy at stake with Virginia Tech. So two rivalry games that we haven't seen in quite a while in the same season. So that's exciting. I think there's a lot of open questions for Pitt, because – you know, they're coming off of a great season, except they lost their quarterback and they've lost their top wide receiver. Obviously, if you don't have a Heisman contender to throw to him, he was going to look for another school where he could try to build up his tape. So this is a really good chance, I think, for West Virginia to kind of come in here and to win the brawl. Just because Pitt's going to have to shake off some rust, and they're going to have to feel things out with a new lot of new talent in the offensive on the offensive side of the ball. So if Neil Brown was kind of make a splash, I think this is his chance to do it and, you know, kind of set the stage for this season. Be interesting to see what Graham Harrell's offense looks like for West Virginia as well. See if they can make some waves.
I love that dynamic between all of those schools. You know, as you said, the classic rivals, the Big East rivals, Pitt, West Virginia, Virginia Tech. And then you even throw in, you know, the team that wishes they were part of it, but also kind of has that sort of, you know, close relationship with Marshall and West Virginia being the two schools that play FBS in the state. It's just, it's wonderful. It's frenemies. There's such hate, but at the same time, they delight in seeing those games play each other. So I'm excited to see the backyard brawl played again. And I think fans from both, I remember when they announced that game was coming, it was like a big thrill. Sirius, you wanted to add something?
I don't know if I would go so far as to say frenemies. I think there is very much a lot of hatred between those schools, especially West Virginia and Pitt. You know, West Virginia, Virginia Tech to a lesser extent, but there is some real animosity there. And frenemies might be just a little bit too far in terms of how cordial.
Like, is it like Gatorade me's or, you know?
I think dire enemies, maybe. That's, you know, that's kind of it. You know, the only thing that would maybe come close to it, I guess, is kind of saying it's like an older sibling, younger sibling, where, you know, I'm allowed to make fun of them, but nobody else is. Would be as close as you could get to like a cordial aspect to it, just because of the shared regionality between those three schools, and you know, deep in Appalachian coal country. That aspect of it, where maybe, you know, outsiders aren't allowed to pick on each other, but, you know, they're allowed to try to kill each other pretty much.
I don't think people realize the game's coming. It's coming Thursday. They don't realize that the schools are closer by to each other than anyone, you know, would know offhand. They're only about an hour away. And for reference, that's closer. I'm a Florida fan. That's closer than Gainesville is to Athens. That's closer than Gainesville is to Tallahassee, and they're in the same state. I mean, these schools are literally right next to each other. It's a tough decision for people to choose where they're going to go for school. A lot of West Virginia kids are getting into Pitt, and they're going to West Virginia, not as good of a school, just because that's where their family went to school. I mean, I've got a lot of family in that region of the country, and I'm just really excited to see this go down. And it's on a Thursday, so, I mean, It's the best game on Thursday, and it's not close.
We're looking forward to it, that's for sure. So thanks again for joining us, Wolf. Thanks for bringing up the backyard brawl. We're looking forward to it. So let's see here. CJ, you've been really patient. We'd love to hear from you.
Perfect. Thank you so much for letting me join here. I just had a quick question about the Utah-Florida game, and also just about Utah. I'm a Utah fan. I feel like last year could have gone a little different if Cam Rising starts, you know, every game, and if we're not having to use a running back to try to guard Smith and Jigba in the Rose Bowl, where he absolutely destroyed Utah. But I guess what my question is the spread on that one is also, you know, very slim. I understand that, you know, Utah's not used to playing in that type of an environment with, you know, the Swamp is one of the toughest places to play on top of all the, you know, heat and humidity, fans right on top of you. So, you know, kind of just wanted to get your feelings on how you think that game's going to go. And if Utah, I mean, obviously a lot of hype around them. They're ranked, you know, very, very high in the poll to start the season. I'm very optimistic. I know how good of a coach Kyle Whittingham is, and I think their defense, as always, is going to be really tough and probably have the best quarterback we've had in a long time. So just kind of had a couple questions about Utah and kind of go ahead and go on mute here and see what you guys think.
You know, we mentioned Utah a little bit earlier, but I think in terms of their ranking everybody has a lot of respect for what Kyle Whittingham has done there. The consistency that he's brought to that program year in, year out, that they can contend. And right now with the polls, it seems like there's just a lot of confusion about where people want to rank the teams basically from 4th to 10th. Because there's a lot of potential there. But there's also been quite a good amount of turnover on a lot of those coaching staffs and rosters. So it's going to be interesting to see how that shakes out. They're in a good spot. If they come out and perform well, then it puts them kind of into a little bit of a catbird seat coming out of week one, just because not every team is going to have a chance to make a statement win that's in the top 10. As far as preparing for that game, obviously the heat and humidity that they're going to face in Florida, very, very different environment compared to what they're used to. But it's not necessarily the end of the world, because we've seen teams find ways to get creative and prepare for that. You know, a few years ago, I think it was Boise State was prepping to play Florida State, and they were practicing it inside, turning on sprinklers, trying to really amp up the humidity. I've heard that Utah's doing the same thing, popping in lots of loud music and practices, trying to get ready for the swamp. Both the meteorological environment as well as the noise environment of the actual fans in the stadium being loud and rowdy. So I think that they're trying to do what they can to prepare for that. And it can work. You know, with that Boise State game, we saw them actually handle the humidity better than Florida State's players, because, you know, a lot of the teams in the Southeast have indoor practice arenas for a reason, so that they can get out of the heat a little bit and get more reps in. So it'll be interesting to see how Utah was able to prep for that, if they have a lot of guys going down with cramps, or if they were able to get everything ready going into it. And obviously, Kyle Whittingham's been there. He's established. He knows how to run a program, how to prep players, versus, you know, Florida's got a new head coach. And whenever you bring in a completely new staff, there's always some issues. It seems like some kinks to get out of the system in terms of getting everybody right onto your program, trained up the way you want them to. And you never know. They could have some of their own, you know, weather-related issues as well. So it'd be interesting to see how both teams handle the environment this weekend.
Perfect. Well, I appreciate it. One quick last little thing I just wanted to ask about Utah is, I've seen a couple of people in, like, national publications picking them to make the college football playoff. Realistically, what do you think Utah would have to do? Do you think they'll have to go undefeated and win the Pac-12, or do you think they can afford to have, you know, one loss at some point on that schedule, or do you think it's going to have to be, you know, them running the table and winning the Pac-12?
Running the table is going to have to probably be a necessity to guarantee something, but I think if they go, you know, a 12-1 and the one loss is a fairly forgivable one, especially if it's a loss against Florida and then they run the table after that, I think that leaves them in a fairly good position. One of the big issues is just going to be, you know, if we get a situation where we have an undefeated Alabama, a undefeated Ohio State, a one loss Georgia, and then, you know, you suddenly have a one loss Utah going against a one loss Clemson, for example, or you're going up against a 13-0 Houston or somewhere else like that. That's kind of like where you have to kind of hope that stuff kind of flips in and is able to work out. But if not, I think if you have an early loss and you have just one loss for Utah, I think you have a possibility. But if you're undefeated, I think you're in. If you're an undefeated Power 5 team, I cannot imagine a world if, you know, 2014 Florida State was able to get in, even if they weren't the greatest undefeated team in all time. I cannot imagine a Power 5 team going undefeated and not making it to the playoffs.
Yeah, running the table, I think, always helps. And I have to tag on that, you know, I think the other part of it is going to depend on what happens with the rest of the season. If it's a chaotic season, then obviously the bar gets lower. You can get through with one, maybe two losses, if they're the right losses. But if it's a season where the front runners are all, you know, chalk all the way through, taking care of business, then that's where your margin of error starts to shrink. And, you know, you kind of need Florida to have a good season as well, San Diego State to have a good season. And also you need at least one of your counterparts in the Pac-12 to have a good season so that you have a good either regular season matchup, if we're talking about, you know, like an Oregon or a USC, or you have a good conference championship game if it's somebody that you're not playing.
Cool. Well, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
We appreciate it as well. Hey, Kenny, what's up? You've been patient.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Great.
So I'm a Purdue student, and I was just wondering, you know, I kind of, when it comes to the summer, you know, I kind of check out maybe with college football and everything a little bit. And I only, my only frame of reference, you know, for how good Purdue is going to be is, you know, here on campus and other, you know, Purdue fans who are obviously going to be biased. So we have this huge game on Thursday against Penn State, you know, Thursday night, week one, under the lights, this whole, you know, whole thing, good opponent. And I think we're all excited, you know, we're all amped. But realistically, I have no idea how the rest of the college football world looks at Purdue this season and says, okay, how, you know, how the Boilermakers going to do this year. I mean, I know some stuff online has talked pretty charitably about us. Someone had us going 11-1, which, I mean, you know, is crazy to me to even possibly entertain. I don't think I even do. But, you know, like what do people expect out of Purdue this year? What do people expect going into, you know, Thursday night?
I think my first thing that I'm expecting out of Purdue is, first and foremost, continued wonderful quarterback play from Aiden O'Connell. I mean, last year he threw for nearly 30 touchdowns and nearly 4,000 yards. He's come back. He brings in that knowledge of the playbook, that familiarity with Jeff Brohm, and that trust with his offensive coordinator. You've got Tyrone Tracy coming in, and of course Charlie Jones just transferred in from Iowa to help him out as well. So I'm hoping that we get to see some kind of a vertical offense from Jeff Brohm, because we saw when it would work when, you know, Rondale Moore was a wide receiver out there lighting everybody up as the five-star that was promised to be at Purdue. I think that's what people are mostly looking for Purdue for this year. Some kind of exciting offense. I think most general expectations are going to be somewhere in that 7-5, 8-4 range, with at least one Spoilermakers game. Maybe that's against Penn State to open up the year. Maybe that's later in the year and you're going to go pull the pants down on somebody when they least expect it. Because again, I just think of that example of, you know, when y'all went and just absolutely beat Ohio State a couple years ago when they were looking at being playoff contenders, and then just out of nowhere, wham, Spoilermakers came in and just ran them over on the tracks. I think that's what everybody's looking for Purdue this year. And I mean, somebody please, like, correct me if you're expecting something else from Purdue this year.
I think they have a great shot of getting to a bowl game. I think that's one thing where I would be willing to see as a successful season for the Boilermakers is getting back into a bowl game. Obviously, they were last year and they had that overtime win. But I think now, I'm not sure. It's always tough because, you know, it's not the West is certainly a little more wide open, I would say, than the East in some certain ways. It's certainly possible. Wisconsin is presumed to be the probably the favorite of those teams. But, you know, if Iowa or Minnesota made it through, I wouldn't be shocked after seeing what Northwestern did. Who knows? Maybe that was the sign that, you know, Nebraska wasn't necessarily bad, but Northwestern, this is one of their weird years where they're great. So it's hard to tell. So I think where it goes for the Boilermakers is a great question. I think certainly getting to a bowl game would be great. I know it was funny too, when I was flying back from my trip, I was buying some pretty serious Boilermaker Purdue boosters. I saw their backpack. They had, like, you know, I forgot what the club is called, but clearly, you know, they were really passionate about the team, and I was asking them about it. And they were a little grumpy about where things were going just in general with college football, because they were older fans, and I get that. But at the same time, they seemed bullish about the idea of the Purdue was going to do well, but I don't know if they were planning to go all the way to a championship necessarily visit. But they're not awful. I could think of some other teams where people ask us charitably how they're going to do, and it's kind of hard to find the success that maybe a fan would hope for. But I think, what do you think? I mean, what are your feelings about this, Kenny? We're all kind of blathering on, but you're the fan here. Where would you like to see them? What do you realistically think they're going to end up?
I mean, it's really hard to say for me personally, just because, like I said, I, you know, when it comes to, like, recruit signings and transfers and everything, that's kind of where I tune out over the summer a little bit. But, I mean, I know that we have O'Connell back, which is still going to be fantastic for us. I know, like you said, we have the wide receiver from Iowa back, and we should have a fantastic wideout core this year. So I'm expecting really good things out of the offense. I think the biggest question mark is the defense, because that was really good last year, whereas that kind of doesn't tend to be Purdue's biggest strength. I mean, at least in my 4 years here, it kind of seems like defense is always what lets us down. Like in the last minute, you know, we lose a close one, something like that. So I think if our defense can be as good as it was last year and our offense can be as good or even better, I mean, I think the expectation among Purdue fans on campus is, you know, to be a dark horse contender or even just contender outright for the Big West. I mean, winning the championship against, you know, an Ohio State that looks absolutely loaded, you know, also Michigan as well, you know, maybe not. But I think the idea of winning the Big West rather than just being, oh, okay, you know, Purdue, they're, you know, a decent team. They're going to, you know, suck a lot of the time, you know, barely beat Illinois, but then they're going to, you know, upset a top five team. I think people have bigger hopes for that this year. But also, I always say I'm a Dolphins fan, Lions fan, and Purdue fan, so I don't do well with having a lot of sports hope. So I try to keep it realistic, you know. But either way, I think it's just going to be fun. I think we're having a fun team.
Absolutely. Well, thanks again for joining us, Kenny. We really appreciate it. Let's see here. You know, David, we've seen you patient. We want to let you up. Probably going to wrap up pretty soon after this. But you know what? We enjoy talking to all of you there. So what's up?
Yeah, it's good to speak with you again. Obviously, last time I spoke, I talked about Texas A&M, who's not even my team. If you recall, my team is Florida. And so I want to talk about Florida. More specifically, I want to, you know, I want to talk about the big three in Florida, you know, the Gators, the Seminoles, and, you know, and the Hurricanes. You know, I'm just, you know, kind of longing for, like, the days where, you know, like, we're all of Florida and Florida State and Miami just, you know, dominated, you know, college football. You know, obviously, I don't like Miami. I really, really don't like Florida State. But I have to say that, like, as much as it annoys me that Miami is just doing really well in recruiting, in a way, like, I kind of also like, or maybe not like, I appreciate that they're doing well in, like, in recruiting. Like, I appreciate that both us and Miami are doing well in recruiting because, you know, college football is so much better, I think, when all three of our teams, you know, are doing well. So I like that Florida and Miami, like, are stepping it up in recruiting. But then I look at Florida State and I'm just wondering, like what the hell are you guys doing? You know, they're behind both of us in, you know, in recruiting. And, you know, just like I don't know, like, what's going on there. And listen, like, as a Florida fan, like, I will always laugh at FSU's, you know, demise anytime it happens. But as a human being with whatever, you know, whatever shred of sympathy I can muster up for the Noles, like, I feel bad for them. Like, I feel bad for Noles fans for how far, you know, their program has fallen, because, you know, that's the team that, like, listen, they might not have the history of other teams like Alabama or Notre Dame, but, like, they are a proud program, or at least they were once a proud program. And, like, that's a team that should be up there, like, continuously, you know, up there. And it's just sad to see, you know, like, where they're at, you know, right now. And, you know, I do hope that one day we can get back to a time where we're all of Florida and Florida State and Miami are, like, doing really, really well. Because, like I said, I think college football is better than or better when all teams are doing well. Yeah, I know I kind of fumbled my words a little bit, but I hope that made sense.
Yeah, I think we can all agree that, you know, that 12, 14-year period, it seemed like where it was just a rotation between the three big Florida schools of, you know, who was competing for championships that year. Definitely made for a really interesting college football landscape and a lot of just really contentious games because – you know, especially at Florida, Florida State, where they met time and time again under Bowden and Spurrier, and both were ranked in the top 10 or the top 5, and it basically was deciding, you know, which team's going to get to go to the national championship this year. And just a really interesting time and dynamic for college football, and it's nice when you've got rivals that are competitive and that the stakes are so high, there's so much riding on that game that, you know, this little mistakes and errors, you know, become magnified because of it. As for what Florida State's got going on and, you know, the whole recruiting aspect of it, you know, it is technically still August. It is a long time until the first signing day, let alone the second one. And yeah, winning sure fixes everything. And losing can destroy quite a bit. So you've got two new head coaches at Florida and Miami. You've got one head coach that's been in a rebuild process for, you know, 3 years. So it's going to be interesting to see how they all do, because that's going to, in my mind, really determine, you know, who wins these recruiting battles, because obviously they're fighting over a lot of the same in-state talent. And nothing's finalized until, I guess now they can send PDFs via email instead of having to do the fax machine. Finally took a step into the 21st century. But until those letters get signed and sent over, nothing's official. So I would wait to hold back my judgment until the end of the season, or at least halfway through it, to kind of see, you know, is FSU in another slide this year to where they can't pull it out? Is this going to be the final straw for Norvell? Or is he finally going to get the ship turned around? And then how are these new coaches doing at Florida and Miami? And are they moving their programs in the right direction? Because they've got some work to do there as well. Obviously, like, whenever you take over a program, unless you're lucky and the guy you had it before you got promoted off, there's going to be a lot that you need to revamp in order to get them back and make them competitive again. So I don't think that the story is written yet for the 2022 season. And in terms of where these programs are headed, I think there's still a lot up in the air. Definitely Florida State has the most ground to make up, though.
Yeah, no, that's definitely a fair point. And trust me, like, as a Florida fan, like, I know all too well, you know, about what it means to, like, to have to be patient. You know, that's something that we Florida fans really need to work on. But I appreciate your input.
And we appreciate you joining us, David. Thank you so much. It was great hearing from you again. So
yeah, thank you.
Thank you. We're going to go ahead and start wrapping up here. We've got quite a bit past our normal time, but we love hearing from folks. Tuesday nights, as I said, we like to now keep to having call-in shows, because we like hearing from you. All of you have very interesting perspectives, and it's nice to hear about games all over the country. I mean, not only do we obviously talk about the Backyard Brawl, Florida and Utah, you know, FSU and LSU, the Ohio State Notre Dame game. There's so many aspects of, I mean, obviously what's going on in Florida and all the recruiting. I think this has been great. So we always enjoy hearing from you. Thanks to all of you. Thanks from me, Bobby Kyrie, from JD Moore, who had to quickly jump out, from Sirius. Have a great night, everybody. Now on the hang up and listen.